Funding for Think comes from SMU Doctor and Master of Liberal Studies programs.
And the Oscar goes to, well, we'll know Sunday night, but we do know for certain who won't be taking home a statue. For the second year in a row, the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences has nominated only white performers in the acting and screenwriting categories, with just a single nominee of color in the competition for Best Director, Alejandro Iñárritu for The Revenant. This is Think on KERA. I'm Chris Boyd. Some major celebrities say they will not be attending this year's ceremony, including Spike Lee, Will Smith, and Jada Pinkett Smith. And Academy President Cheryl Boone Isaacs, who is African-American, has acknowledged the organization's voting membership is not diverse enough. But some critics suggest the root of the problem is not the Academy, but the system that controls who gets to write, direct, cast, and market which films. We've invited three guests to talk about this with us today. Filmmaker Yaqui Smith is Assistant Professor of Film and Video at the University of Texas at Arlington. Chris Wagner is Culture Critic for the Dallas Morning News. And Deidre Woodard is a producer and member of Women in Film Dallas. Welcome all of you to Think.
Thank you, Chris.
Thank you.
Why did the Oscars matter?
Do they? Really? I mean, that's a really good question. What do you guys think the Oscars? I think they matter because they're the way that we care about Hollywood for some reason.
I mean, it's always been the gold standard. It's kind of been the thing that actors aspire to. But personally, I mean, I think it's really time for a change.
I agree. I mean, I think, you know, historically they have been the gold standard. You know, we all have, you know, wanted that Oscar, or we all have looked at the Oscars and said, you know, this is the best performance or this is the best film.
Right.
But honestly, things are changing, you know, with all of the independent films that are coming out that are not ever recognized at the Oscars. We're seeing a change in the way the films are made. And we're also seeing a change in the way I think that we gauge what we think are the best films of the year.
And also the way that distribution is occurring. I mean, there's so many different platforms for projects to get out there to the public, as opposed to just being seen at a movie theater.
I read an interpretation that one reason that Beasts of No Nation was not nominated was that it comes from a really threatening place from the perspective of old Hollywood. It was produced for Netflix, right?
Idris Elba.
And, you know, it's interesting because, look, the film did have, you know, its sort of Oscar run, its theatrical run, although it did get distributed on Netflix. And, you know, I kind of agree. I mean, I think a film like that, it's difficult when you see films about especially Black people, when they are not subservient, when they are not playing maids, when they're not playing slaves, when they're not trying to overcome,
because the Academy's
the
okay
white
with
power
those
system.
Films.
Of course, right? Oh, they love those films, right? Because, you know, it goes back to this whole idea of like what I consider white guilt, where it's okay to see us sort of overcoming and really like struggling against it, and then saying, "All right, they made it out." So if they
we helped them make it,
but if that one person in that film made it out, then everybody should be okay and everything is okay. But when you see a film that's not about that, I don't think they can identify because they don't know how to take it.
The other thing about those kinds of movies is that usually when they do make it out, they make it out because of some noble white person.
There you go. Mm-hmm.
So true.
Which is like Mississippi Burning, kind of the classic example where they turn the white FBI agents into the heroes of the civil rights movement.
Exactly.
Which is kind of amazing if you think about it.
It's not like there were not incredibly impressive performances from Black actors this year. So I want to listen back to a montage of some noteworthy films here.
Young men, wealth, we will not wait to inherit any wealth. We will not wait for them to come and give it to us.
No, sir.
We are going to take it.
Yes, sir.
We're going to take it from them.
Yes, sir.
Seize it.
Yes, sir.
Your songs, they glamorize the lifestyle of gangs, guns, drugs.
Our art is a reflection of our reality. What you see when you go outside your door?
I know what I see.
And it ain't glamorous.
You get AKs from Russia and cocaine from Colombia.
And ain't none of us got a passport, so you might want to check the source.
Yeah, next question.
Will you be more careful about what you say, how you say it?
No. Probably not. No.
Why? Freedom of speech includes rap music, right? But we exercise in our First Amendment, as far as I'm concerned.
Do you know what history does to people? Trained physicians who ignore science.
Oh, wow.
Sir, I am not done. History laughs. If you continue to deny my work, the world will deny my work. but men, your men, continue to die, their families left in ruins. Tell the truth. Tell the truth.
So, what are you afraid of?
I'm afraid of taking on the name and losing. They'll call me a fraud, fake Creed.
What'd you think about what's true? You love to fight, right? Yeah, it makes you happy, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and you are Apollo Creed's son, right?
Yes.
So then use the name. It's yours.
Those were scenes from Beasts of No Nation, Straight Outta Compton, Concussion, and Creed, none of which was nominated for Best Picture this year. We're speaking about that with my guest this hour. In the popular imagination, the culture of the entertainment industry is almost a parody of liberalism. Is it actually more conservative than people realize?
It's very averse to risk, and it's very averse to change. So I think Hollywood in particular projects this very progressive image. And I think a lot of people in the academy and in the industry have progressive thoughts and impulses and voting habits, but they're also very entrenched in the kinds of movies that they make and the kinds of stories they're comfortable with. And I think that's the problem. And we can talk about this more as we go. I mean, it goes way beyond the Oscars. It's a year-round issue that we tend to talk about during Oscar season.
I mean, all those movies that you just played through, had the lead actor in any of those movies been anything other than black, it would have gotten a nomination. I mean, Creed was a fabulous story. Straight Outta Compton was phenomenal on so many different levels. And, you know, I remember being in college listening to the music. And so watching the film made me realize, wow, here, when I was in college, I was thinking that they had already arrived, but they were still just out there, you know, trying to make it. But you have issues that we're still facing today with police brutality. And it's like full circle. And so it's very risky for the panelists who are making those decisions in terms of which films are getting nominated to say, okay, am I going to put that film out there? Then what type of backlash am I going to have as a result of that? But every single one of those films should have been nominated.
Yeah, and I mean, I agree. You know, I think Chris said something about being comfortable. And I think it makes the Academy voters very uncomfortable when you see a film that really, like, brings them to task. You know, and a film like Straight Outta Compton does that. I think the clip that you played is indicative of that. He says, none of us have passports, so where is this stuff coming from? Well, that's a big question. Where is it coming from? And to be honest with you, you know, it's coming from a white power system that's bringing these things in, that's bringing these things to the inner city. And it's funny because I was looking at a post on Facebook, I think it was, and somebody said, well, you know, most Academy voters don't like gangster rap, so that's why a film like Straight Outta Compton could not be nominated. And as I'm watching that film, I think the last thing that I'm actually seeing is gangster rap, because that's not what that film is about. That film is about why NWA had to come about, why they were constantly surveilled by the police, why they were selling drugs, why there was so much violence in their communities. And all they were doing was putting that on record and then putting that out to the world for people to understand that we're not just here killing each other and selling drugs. We're doing these things because we're in impossible circumstances. And when you put that out there, it does make the system say, wait a minute, if they're saying that they've been put in impossible circumstances, who put them there?
Well, it's taking a look at a consciousness that they have no idea about. And so that's the problem. I mean, Cheryl Boone Isaacs is making, you know, trying to make changes to how the board actually looks right now. You know, she came in 2013, and same with, you know, us having a black president right now. Change is not going to occur overnight. And personally, boycotting the Oscars is not going to do anything. That's not going to give us the change that we're looking for. Change is going to have to happen at that level where people are making the decisions.
Let's listen to Cheryl Boone Isaacs for a minute.
Everybody votes individually, right? It's an online voting. Nobody sees what you vote. Nobody knows what individuals vote. But the issue for us right now is an organization that is 94% white and 77% male. So when you have, a selection of nominees that doesn't show any kind of diversity, I mean, that is just wrong.
When you hear those statistics, 94% white, 77% male, is this a matter of the voters simply choosing movies that feel like they're telling their stories or characters that they can relate to?
I mean, you can factor age in there as well.
Yeah.
I mean, it's Hollywood is old white guys.
But why don't we? I mean, there's this idea that, like, you know, white men won't watch movies about people of color. They won't watch movies about women. Why are people of color and women expected to watch movies about white men?
Because I'll say this: when you see a film that stars a person of color or a woman, it becomes the story about a black person, the story about a woman, right? It loses the real sort of soul that the story has. For example, I was listening to Hill Harper, and he was talking about a film called 1982, which is about addiction and about a man who's trying to keep his family together. Yet, when you see that film, all you see is a film about a black family in Chicago trying to survive. And I think that when the Academy voters, who are, again, what did she say, 77% mm-hmm. white, I believe she said, they can't identify with that because all they see is the black face. They can't really see the soul and the heart of the story. Yet, when we watch movies about white men or the white experience, we have to look at those films and say, wait a minute, it's not about them being white. It's about, you know, this or that or about the subject matter.
It's funny. I mean, just I'm thinking about the theme or the phrase, you know, the idea of the white experience. Which is basically American history as it has been written very recently.
Right.
That's I think that speaks volumes in itself.
How much of this is about marketing and the way, you know, certain films are presented as, you know, a special story about, you know, an African American family dealing with addiction?
I think it's all about marketing. You know, I think when films that star African Americans, when they usually come out, they don't get the same marketing strategy as other films do, because the idea of it being about a black family or about being about a black protagonist, that takes center stage. It's not just a story about this doctor, or it's not just a story about a family. It's a story about a black family or a black doctor. And what that does is I think it limits the amount of people that actually want to go see that, because immediately when they see that, they say, well, I can't identify with that. That's not my story. I don't want to see that.
I don't think Warner Brothers, I'm thinking of Creed here, Warner Brothers didn't really know what they had there either, because they, like a lot of us, were like, that's another Rocky movie.
People love to watch it bleeding on screen. Right?
Why would we give that an Oscar push? It's Rocky 7 or whatever number they're on. And then it ends up being this really good movie.
Great movie.
Extremely entertaining movie with really good performances. And they had not prepared any kind of Oscar campaign for it because they didn't know what they had. I think if at some point in a case like that, if you get behind a movie early and put the marketing budget into it and say Michael B. Jordan, really deserving Best Actor candidate, Ryan Coogler directed that film, really deserving Best Director candidate, then we might be having a slightly different conversation, not a whole lot different, but a little bit.
We're speaking this hour with Chris Wagner, who is culture critic for the Dallas Morning News, Deidre Woodard, a producer and a member of Women in Film Dallas, and Yaquie Smith, a filmmaker and assistant professor of film and video at UTA. If you'd like to join our conversation about the lack of diversity in 2016 Academy Award nominations, you can call us at 1-800-933-5372, email think@kera.org, or find me on Twitter at Chris Boyd Think.
Funding for Think comes from the SMU Graduate Liberal Studies Program. You can apply now for the Doctor of Liberal Studies degree beginning in the fall of 2016. A customizable evening graduate program for working professionals. More at smu.edu/GLS.
For me, it's more about putting my hand up and, you know, reminding my community, the Hollywood community, that we have to lead, that, you know, diversity is America's superpower.
The Academy has the right to acknowledge whomever they choose, to invite whomever they choose. And now I think that it's our responsibility now to make the change.
We're not in the room. We are not in the room. The executive, when they had these green light meetings quarterly, where they look at the scripts, they look who's in it, and they decide what we're making, what we're not making.
The films, I think, that are coming out of Hollywood aren't truthful. And the reason they're not truthful these days is because they're not really depicting the importance and the involvement and the participation of people of color in our American culture.
I'm not going, my wife's not going, and everybody else can do what they want to do.
That was Will Smith, Jada Pinkett Smith, Spike Lee, Halle Berry, and then Spike Lee again speaking about the Oscar controversy. How important are those very public announcements that those, you know, very respected professionals will not be at the awards?
I think it's important to create awareness. I mean, it creates awareness about hashtag Oscars so white. I mean, that started a few years back. But like I was sharing earlier, I don't feel like boycotting the Oscars is going to cause things to change overnight. Yes, it'll create awareness. What we need right now is a Caucasian nominee to stand up and say, I'm boycotting the Oscars. That's the voice that we need to have stand up to start really making an impact.
I agree. The boycott isn't going to change anything drastically immediately. I think what it did do in this case was really accelerate this conversation, because we've been having it for a long time. We even started having it some before the boycott was announced. And then I think a lot of people's ears kind of pricked up when they heard that there was a boycott being planned. And I think that kind of pushed this kind of talk and this conversation on into a broader arena. So I think something like a boycott can be very good for that purpose. And I love that, you know, Spike Lee, I mean, I think back to his best film, Do the Right Thing, which, you know, all the action comes down to this. They're trying to boycott the pizzeria.
Sal's, yeah.
Yeah, boycott Sal's. No brothers on the wall.
Me, honestly, I don't think any of it matters. I think what has to happen, I think Jada Pinkett hit it on the head. The Oscars can nominate, invite whoever they want to. We have to be the change. And what that means is that people of color, minorities, we have enough money in our communities to make our own films. Mm-hmm. We have some, I mean, I can call some people out. You got a Oprah, you got a Tyler Perry, you have a Will and Jada. These people are worth hundreds of millions of dollars. And if they want to see change, what you do is you take $20 million, mm-hmm. you go out to these film festivals, you find these great, you know, filmmakers from NYU and UT and USC and UCLA and all these great film schools around the country, and you give them money to make those films. Because if we can then build a catalog of films that are good, before you know it, guess what? We don't have to ask to be invited. We will be invited because we'll have the content out there. And right now, we're asking to be invited into a system that doesn't want to invite us in. So what do? We fight that system by making our own content.
And then start having the Omars.
I want to talk a little bit about the idea of colorblind casting in film. And it's always like the second, you know, role. It's seldom the, you know, the lead role in which it's not a white person cast. But how important is that? And does colorblind casting sometimes put actors of color in the position of having to sort of strip whatever ethnic or racial identity they have from that character in order to play a character whose race is immaterial?
I've got a project that I'm working on right now. In terms of casting, when I think about casting for a project, I think sometimes you have a specific character in mind. You have their ethnicity, you have their personality all played out. And sometimes you need to be open to that changing, because someone could come in and audition for a role and not fit the image that you kind of have in your mind,
but they
nail it. Exactly. Ultimately, what you need is chemistry amongst your cast in order to have your project be successful, because without chemistry, it's not going to be believable to the audience. And so, you know, I once had a manager say that In his history, he always hired white males. And it wasn't until he started hiring people that didn't look like him that his success started to change. And so you have to have someone who's going to be willing to take that risk and step outside of their box, out of their comfort zone, and do something that they have not done before. Yaki, you know, you talk about a lot of, you know, well-known people outside of the state, but even locally here in Texas, there are a lot of people who are focusing on diversity and giving, you know, actors of color that opportunity. I mean, Greg Ellis is one over at Play Now Studios. He's got the Your Now Network, which is on a Roku station that hits 10 million households. You've got Coy Poitier at New Real Studios. He's doing a lot of great things over there. And they even have their own little, like an investment model set up. So locally here in Texas, there are a lot of resources and a lot of opportunities for independent actors of color and talent, and producers and writers to get their projects out there and to get exposure. If they're hitting a brick wall when they're trying to get to Hollywood.
I wonder how TV got so far ahead of the movies in this case. It's not perfect, but they seem to have realized that it really serves them to create work in which the characters reflect the people who are watching the shows, at least way more than Hollywood does. And I think you can look at specific shows like Black-ish, which I think is really funny and really well written. Which is very much about a black family living in the suburbs. And then you just have shows where, I don't know if casting is colorblind, it might be not, but you see a character, multiple characters of certain races and ethnicities, and you don't really blink. You're just used to it by now. TV seems to have figured it out to an extent anyway that the movies have not.
That's true. I mean, I think, you know, especially in like minority communities, we have watched television shows that feature African Americans, that feature Asian Americans, literally save networks. Mm-hmm. We have watched this happen. Shows like Girlfriends, shows like I can't even think of the other shows at the moment, but there have been so many shows that have saved networks, and then once those networks are saved, they kind of push those shows to the side. Mm-hmm. But I think with Netflix and Amazon and HBO, they know that we're watching. And they know that people want to see a true reflection of who they are on screen. And because it doesn't have to do with, you know, going to the movies and paying $12, and it doesn't have to do with box office, it has to do with you, you know, purchasing your HBO, purchasing your Netflix, which you're already doing. I think they're able to actually open up the door much more to people who don't look like, you know, what Hollywood thinks people want to see on screen, because they know that we're watching anyway.
Let's go to the phones now at 1-800-933-5372. We have John on the line in Nacogdoches. Hi, John.
Hello.
Hi, go right ahead, please.
I just was curious. It seems like there needs to be a requirement for various cultures and races and whatnot to be included, but wouldn't a requirement like that seem to undermine the art that's produced?
I don't think there's like a quota or a requirement. I think that would kind of defeat the purpose. I think the idea is to consider stories that you're not used to and stories that might take you out of your normal comfort zone. It needs to be a lot more organic than, as the caller suggested, a requirement.
Well, but also just like consider like reality. How do you make a film that takes place in New York City, a film that takes place in LA, and there are absolutely no people of color in the main cast? It doesn't make sense. It doesn't reflect reality. When I go to New York, I see people of all shapes, colors, sizes. But when I see films in New York, usually I don't see those same people reflected on screen. And so we're not asking for anybody to meet a quota. We're just saying, you know what? Be real, be truthful, and be open, and let people of color get on screen.
It's all about creating opportunity.
I'm really curious about Chris Rock hosting the ceremony. And I happened to see an ad the other night, and it was edited very, it felt to me really deliberately to demonstrate that, well, in years past, there were people of all races winning awards. He's in a tough spot here.
Yeah, but at the same time, I mean, I think I've written he's going to be like a shark at a seafood buffet. I mean, this is
oh, he's up to it.
This
yeah.
is the ideal
perfect
year
he's
for Chris Rock to do the Oscars. And frankly, I thought he was great last time he did the Oscars. I happen to be a very big Chris Rock fan. But he's very incisive about these kinds of issues that we're talking about, and he has the gift of being very funny about them at the same time. So that's, I mean, I'm far more interested in what he's going to be up to than I am in who's going to win Oscars.
Now, I won't be watching, I'm going to be honest. So I'll get on YouTube the next day to hear what Chris Rock had to say.
That's all you need, because you'll get the best cuts anyway, right?
It's the best way to watch most TV these days, actually.
Do you think he will be less, I mean, I don't feel like he holds back very much, but do you think because of the situation this year, there will be less pressure from the Academy to sort of edit his scripts?
That's a really good question. Because he doesn't, I mean, does he seems to not really
he
edit himself
yeah,
much
care.
Anyway. Mm-hmm. He's kind of a force of nature, and I think he gets to hire, to some extent, his own writers.
Also, I think the producer this year is
Reginald Hudlin,
I believe.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
So, I mean, he's African-American, so I think they're going to, you know, have each other's back, you know, because they both feel, I think, the sting of not seeing any people of color nominated. Mm-hmm. And so he's probably going to let Chris be Chris and say what Chris wants to say.
I mean, he's already touted as being the BET Awards for the white BET
yeah,
Awards.
Yeah, he called the Oscars the white BET Awards.
So, I mean, I think he's going to push that envelope and just, you know, ask for forgiveness later. So
I'm just sorry it's not going to be on cable where all content restrictions are off or on limits, I should say.
I think this is going to go down as being the Oscars that people should definitely watch. We're going to be some interesting segments from Chris out there.
Do you think winning an award this year will be tarnished for the white actors and actresses who are nominated? And in their defense, it's not their fault that there are no nominees right. of color up there with them.
I agree. I mean, you know, I would hate to be someone who's being nominated this year. Because, for example, I think Leonardo DiCaprio did an excellent job in The Revenant, and I believe that he deserves to be nominated. And I would hate to be him knowing that all of this controversy is happening around the Oscars because they literally didn't include people of color, which traditionally they have done this before. But I think it might tarnish it because people who would normally watch, like me, who would be rooting probably for him, I probably won't be watching, you know, and it's bad for him.
Well, and I mean, Ari, I mean, we're having this conversation. When film is doing a conversation about the Oscars, everybody's talking about what's going on with the Oscars, whereas if this conversation weren't taking place, there would be more conversation about the actors who are being nominated.
It is interesting, and the conversations took place last year, but then this year, it was like America needed a second year in a row to fully kind of understand that this is a problem.
Mm-hmm. It's a critical
mass. Or maybe
mass.
I should say white America needed a second year in a row.
But I mean, this has been a problem for decades, years, decades, et cetera. It's really bubbling to the surface now in public conversation, which I think is great.
I looked it up. Only 4 black men and 1 black woman have ever earned Best Actor or Actress statues.
That's right. It's been 14 years since Denzel and Halle both won it in the same year. So, I mean, that was a phenomenal year. But yeah.
The moment that everybody in America said, okay, great.
Now,
yeah, right.
now we have a change. We've
the
got
Oscars
to
has gotten over their diversity problem. Congratulations.
So
all right. Let's go back to the phones here. We have David on the line in Fort Worth. Hi, David.
Hello. You guys have a great topic. So you actually mentioned one of the things that I wanted to touch on earlier was the host, Chris Rock, tweeted that the BET Awards are, Oscars are like the white BET Awards. So if, you know, what chance does integration have, you know, if black entertainers have their own award show?
Interesting question.
Look, we have to have our own award shows. You know, the other night, the American Black Film Festival hosted a night in Hollywood where they honored some great, Ryan Coogler was honored, Regina King was honored, these great performers, these great directors. And if we did not have those shows, those people would never get their due. And so I think we have to have those. Now, that doesn't mean that we don't need to be included in the other award shows, but we were sort of forced to have our own shows because if we didn't, then our performers would never have gotten the recognition that they deserve.
How did we come to define Oscar bait movies as the kinds of movies that there are? I mean, everybody sort of understands what is believed to be an Oscar bait movie.
Well, they started releasing most of them at the end of the year, when the kids are going to be in school and the big summer blockbusters aren't going to do quite as well, so you're not going to see an Avengers movie come out in November, for instance. Certain companies like Miramax, in recent years, not as recent now, but in fairly recent years, if we're going macro here, really kind of perfected the art of pushing their movies as something that is awards worthy. And it's been going on longer than Miramax was around, but they really kind of took it to the next level, to that the very scientific and schmoozy and nonstop party and glad handing kind of level.
Yeah, because you have a film like The Birth of a Nation, which I think was sold for the most money of any other Sundance film. I think it was Nate Parker's film. And they've already, you know, set their release date, October 7th, and they're already saying, like, this is our Oscar run. And so they know that if you release a film during this time, if you market it this way, that it will potentially end up on that stage on Oscar night.
It's interesting to think about, you know, other positions besides just directors and people who are in the top acting roles. What makes it more challenging for a professional of color to break into the movie industry than for a white person?
I think it's largely, I mean, I think Spike Lee said it very well, and he used that analogy. I talked to him a few months ago about Chirac, his last movie, and he used the analogy, an analogy from Hamilton, the Broadway musical, the song In the Room Where It Happens. And his point is that the people who are in that room, in the executive boardrooms, are the ones who decide who is going to, as you said, break through or break in. So when those people, when the people who are actually cutting the checks and calling the shots are very homogenous in their makeup, that is going to determine to a large effect what kind of movies we get to see.
We're talking this hour about the lack of diversity in 2016 Academy Award nominations and in the Hollywood film industry as a whole. My guests are Chris Vogner of the Dallas Morning News, producer Deidre Woodard, a member of Women in Film Dallas, and Yaqui Smith, assistant professor of film and video at the University of Texas at Arlington and a filmmaker. If you'd like to join us, you can call 1-800-933-5372, email think@kera.org, or send me a tweet at Chris Boyd Think.
Funding for Think comes from the SMU Graduate Liberal Studies Program. You can apply now to design your own doctoral or master's degree at SMU, specializing in organizational dynamics, human rights, and more. Details at smu.edu/GLS.
This is Think on KERA. I'm Chris Boyd, speaking this hour with filmmaker Yaqui Smith of UTA, culture critic Chris Vogner of the Dallas Morning News, and producer Deidre Woodard of Women in Film Dallas. She'll be participating in the Urban Conservatory, Embracing Diversity and Development. That's a program that takes place on March 19th, from 11 to 2. You can find information about that at playnowstudios.com. If you'd like to join our conversation, you can call 1-800-933-5372. Let's go on the phone to Anne in Plano. Hey, Anne.
Hi. Thank you for taking me to share. I had a question for the panel, and also just a little comment. I grew up in the Midwest and in the suburbs, and as an African American, I was fine with that. That was not a big deal. When I started auditioning for things when I went down south, I would often get, okay, that's great, but try to act more black. And it really crushed me at first. And I could do it, and I did a role. But I wonder if any of you have had to deal with that whole thing of what some directors, white directors particularly, because blacks, we know we're a diverse group of people, but of white directors wanting, or casting directors wanting you to act black.
Well, I can speak to that. Being from the Midwest myself, I grew up in Ohio. So I remember going on auditions in Ohio, and totally different from when I moved here to Texas. After I got over the fact that I realized that I was in a southern state now, I had been in California for many years, but that same type of experience. And then also, you know, wanting to have more of an, you know, people wanting you to have more of an ethnic look, going, you know, all natural with your hair and not having, you know, having it straighter. So, yes, I feel your pain and have experienced that. How do you get around that? You know, I don't know that you necessarily can get around that, but there are people out there who that's not their MO.
And, you know, look, as a director, you know, I've had producers say to me, you know, I don't know if black people would talk like that, or, you know, when we read this script, why don't you change that a little bit? Because, and I'm like, here I am sitting here, I'm black, I kind of know what we talk like. However, that has to do with the idea of what people have seen on screen of what we are, right?
Yeah.
You think we're one way. We can only talk this way. We can only act this way. But that's because there are so many stories out there that show the totality of who we are that are not getting on screen. And so people right. see us in one way. We're very marginalized.
That's so interesting. So the idea is that people in sort of the broader culture, and maybe specifically white people, are drawing their sense of what it means to be black or Asian or Latino from the very limited pictures that they themselves have created on screen using actors of these ethnicities.
And that, I mean, that's why The Cosby Show was such a powerful show back in the day in terms of representing the, you know, a new perspective on the black family. We didn't have to be maids. We didn't have to be, you know, servants in a home for someone else. We were successful professionals that were educated. Our children were educated, and we had educated conversations.
Robert Townsend made a great comedy about this issue, largely about this issue. It's been about 30 years now, called Hollywood Shuffle. And he was very much on point about how this works. You don't sound black enough. Could you do that a little blacker? All those things. And, I mean, if you look back at the history of Hollywood, the kinds of roles that black people, black actors were allowed to play were usually the buffoon or the thug, the mammy. So it was very limiting, and it was very destructive in creating public perceptions, both inside the industry and just in the general public.
And honestly, that's just now changing. I mean, if you think about a film like The Help, for example, great performances, don't get me wrong, loved Viola, loved Octavia, but to be honest with you, that harkens back to an image that has been perpetuated in Hollywood since the beginning of Hollywood. And I think that's why there was a lot of backlash with that, because people are saying, why can we only be one thing on screen?
How do you convince people to be open to stories that they haven't seen before? How do you, for the segment of the population that thinks, you know, a film about a family that happens to be black or Asian or Latino is going to feel universal if they haven't sort of taken the step of, you know, paying their $12 and buying a ticket in the past?
I think it's, you know, it's bigger than the movies, to be honest with you. It goes back into like media representation, period. Every time you see a person of color on, just sometimes even on the news, it's always some negative connotation. There's always some, oh, they did this, they did that. And so when people see that, they say, okay, well, that means that all of those people are that way. And I think that what needs to happen is we have to see better representation of people of color or minorities in media. We have to see that, you know, in print. We have to see that in movies. We have to hear that on radio. We have to really embrace the all of who we are in all media. And I think once we do that, then people will be able to accept us for that, because they won't think that we're putting on a show.
Right. And I mean, we're seeing it right now with Sports Illustrated. I mean, the young lady that's on the cover of Sports Illustrated, she's not your size zero model. And so that is opening doors now, hopefully. And I mean, I had tweeted out, you know, I'm hoping that this is not a short-lived trend of, you know, Sports Illustrated.
Although that cover is a whole nother, you know, conversation.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But it's opening doors. It's a new way of thinking about things. And that's what has to happen with Hollywood.
There's also this weird phenomenon that, like, I don't worry that people are going to think I'm like coal miner's daughter because they've seen that movie. You know what I mean? But somehow there is still this link that is made that is so inappropriate. And I don't know that everybody's doing it on purpose, but people do sort of, you know, feel like they've seen a movie about something and therefore they've been exposed to a particular culture and can understand it.
I love that you say doing it on purpose because it's interesting. I had a student come into my office. He's from India. And he sat down in front of me and he said, you know, when I first got here, I literally didn't know that I would be sitting in the same classroom with an African-American, let alone have that person be my professor. Because every image that I'd seen on screen from India about African-Americans, they were gangsters, they were thugs, and I should be afraid of them. And I brought that with me when I came over to the United States. And he said, it's so refreshing that I'm sitting here with you and I'm actually in a classroom with other black people and they're not trying to rob me. And that is, again, that's an image that has been so embedded in culture internationally that when you see someone of color, you sometimes want to walk across the street, and that has to change.
What do you do when a student says this to you with, I gather, a great deal of sincerity and it's this revelation, but it's kind of be strange to hear those words?
It is not strange to me at all because I know it to be true. And I'm not insulted by it. I'm not upset by it. And I just sat there and said to him, you know what? I understand where you're coming from because you have watched me been represented in a negative way for so many years that has been ingrained in your brain. And then when you see me, that's all you see is that representation of me. But I'm here sitting in front of you letting you know that what you saw is not the truth.
And you're helping him open his eyes.
Exactly.
Too, and that's actually got to feel really good.
Yeah.
Have you had conversations with that student about the way, like, South Asians are portrayed in the media that shows up here? Because I've interviewed some actors who are Indian by descent or Middle Eastern, and they're in a whole different position where the kinds of roles that are available to them, you know, they could play anybody. They've done Shakespeare, but they are, you know, offered roles as terrorists or roles as, you know, people who are really limited in sort of their scope, the scope of their humanity.
Honestly. Math geek.
Yeah. And it's like, do I not work, therefore not eat, or do I take this job this one time? And it's a tough call, I would imagine, for people to have to make, for artists to have to make.
It's a very tough call. You know, I mean, you know, I think it was Hattie McDaniel who said, I'd rather play a maid than be a maid. Because she, you know, playing the maid, she was making, I don't know how much, but, you know, much more than what she would make if she was actually being a maid in someone's house. And I think that's still something that rings true today. Some actors and some directors, all of us as artists, we've had to do things that we probably normally wouldn't want to do because we have to eat. However, at some point, you have to stop and say, wait a minute, am I going to continue to do this just for the paycheck, or am I going to be the one to say, you know what, I'm not playing this part, I refuse to play this part because I'm not going to let you represent me in a negative way anymore? And that's a difficult line to draw, but somebody has to draw it and say, I'm not doing it.
Chris Wagner, I want to ask you this as a critic, and I know that you see a lot of films and that your tastes are quite diverse, but how much thought do you have to give to the fact that you're a white man and you're looking at movies about a variety of things made by lots of different kinds of people? I mean, how do you, all of us in this room have our prejudices, but how do you sort of examine, you know, separate, you know, what may be unintentional biases from the work that you're doing?
Unintentional biases on my part, you mean?
Yeah.
You can't really. I mean, a critic is the person who's watching the movie, and you bring your life experiences and your beliefs and, you know, your upbringing and all kinds of things to the experience. So, yeah, I mean, well, I think about it more during times like this. Like, you know, last night I was doing another radio program, and we were three white guys talking about diversity in the media. that's ironic. So,
but did you conclude it's everything's fine? Or?
No, absolutely not. We concluded that, you know, it's ironic, and, you know, it's a very deep seated issue that goes way beyond the Oscars and, frankly, way beyond Hollywood.
And Deidre and Yaki, when you're reading criticism, how much do you take into account who's writing it?
You know, honestly, I'll read it at face value first, right? And then if I start seeing things that seem racially insensitive, then I start to research the critic and say, who is this person writing this? Because they really don't get it, you know? And then that's when I, you know, take offense to it.
And I guess I kind of do the same thing. I probably don't go into the research. Once I feel like, you know, this person doesn't make any sense, I'll probably use some other language, but just set it aside.
I will say, just to get back to your question a little bit, I think we need more critics of color. I think that's vital. I think there should be more of a concentrated effort to make that happen, frankly.
I agree, because I think something you said a second ago really rang true to me. It's like you bring your own experience to it when you write it. And if you don't have that experience, sometimes you can't identify with the subject matter. And so that sometimes, you know, finds its way into your criticism. And I think if you have more critics of color, they can look at films that are about people of color and they can be sensitive to that material and also write about it in a way that rings true, because they probably had that experience themselves.
It's a very small thing, but the other day I was watching something and a character was playing a makeup artist. And because I used to work in TV, I sat with makeup artists and I thought, oh, she's really good. She's really capturing that. And it's something that I wouldn't have known if I hadn't had experience with that. And there may be films that I see where I think, well, that looks very authentic, and I may be way off the mark because I just don't know.
And you try finding a journalist who doesn't like Spotlight, for instance. You're like, ooh, they get us so well. I mean, it's human nature to, you can't separate who you are from what you're thinking about a movie or anything else.
What obligations do audiences have to support creative works that really reflect the diversity of America?
They have a huge obligation, because a lot of times when minority films are released and we don't go see those films, those filmmakers will never get a second chance.
Hmm.
And I preach this all the time. It's like, we cannot complain about not seeing ourselves on screen if, when we are on screen, we are not in there buying those tickets and watching those films. Because if we do that, the truth is Hollywood is a money-making machine. It's about money. And if they feel like there's money in it, whether they agree with it or not, they're going to make it, because there's some money to be made. And if we can prove to them that images of us that are very different from the ones that have been perpetuated, if those can make money, they'll continue to make those films.
And then they'll be able to have more of a voice to be able to speak back to Hollywood in terms of impacting change, to say, these are the voices, these are the images, these are the portrayals that reflect me and my, you know, my history. This is what I want to see, not that.
What have you learned, Yaki, about getting the money to make a film?
That is hard.
That's a long conversation.
Yeah, that's another show. But no, it's difficult. You know, you jump through so many hurdles trying to get people to, one, like the film, like you, believe in the project, see that maybe the film will make money, or actually embrace the idea that the film may not make money, but because they believe in you, they'll still give you money. It's a huge, you know, runaround when you're trying to get money to make a film.
Well, and you, Yucky, you made a great film a few years ago called Wolf.
Thank you.
And mm-hmm. it played at the Dallas Film Festival, right?
It did.
But I remember talking to you and also talking to other people and hearing that you were having a hard time kind of making it out of the black festival circuit into, you know, the broader festival world.
It's difficult because, you know, my film, which Chris is talking about, is about a family who discovers their son has been molested by their pastor. And it's not color specific at all. And because of that, I think it's difficult for, I should say, white film festivals to accept that, because it's not specifically about race. It has nothing to do with race.
We have spoken this hour with filmmaker Yaki Smith, assistant professor of film and video at the University of Texas at Arlington, Dallas Morning News culture critic Chris Wagner, and producer Deidre Woodard. It's been a pleasure to have you all here. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Think is produced by Stephen Becker and engineered by Shelley Canavy, with help on the phones from Kristen Taylor. Our executive producer is Jeff Whittington, and I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening, and have a great day.